This program brought to you by Vanderbilt University. You can find more audio and video on our website, vanderbilt.edu/news.
Okay, we'll get a kind of general idea of where everybody is with regards to using online tools. How many of you guys are already on Facebook? Most everybody. Anybody using Twitter? Delicious? Flickr? Gmail? Yay. Okay, that's kind of a general way. We'll start off talking about kind of what the web used to be like. A couple of years ago, Web 1.0 was you went to websites and basically all you did was read what was there. You know, magazines, schools, big companies basically did a brochure on the web, and it was totally static. You were passively looking at the information. You know, you went, you read it, and that was it. Now, it's kind of totally different. You go, you can comment on YouTube, you can make a video comment back about another video, and it's just completely interactive. It's kind of a two-way conversation. Hello! between you and anybody, any one of us. A common phrase that's often used when we're talking about social media is the audience has left the building. Because no longer is there really an audience, because the audience is making the content. Anybody can go online and create a blog and talk about politics. Anybody can go on Facebook and create a group about something they really care about, and you're creating the content. So there's not really those traditional media roles where it's only, you know, the big corporations and the no-named faces creating content online. So it's a brand new world. So that's basically what social media is. It's sharing who you are and what you think online. And you share as much or as little about yourself as you want to. I'm going to skip through. Basically, the term social media refers to all the tools that are out there. Social media doesn't really mean anything on its own. It doesn't stand for anything. It's basically just a blog is social media. Flickr is social media. And so all of these tools are social media. And that's basically just what that jargon stands for. There's a pretty cool little chart that's been making its way around. Oh, it's not just for geeks. I skipped a slide. My mom is on Facebook, which I love. If I was a college student, I probably wouldn't love that. But I can, you know, we keep up with each other, and she sees my little status updates all day long. And, you know, my 89-year-old grandmother is on email, and she's on email all the time. And typically, you know, it's kind of typical. She sends me every joke that she gets. But that's great. She's 89. She's on email. Her house got hit by lightning a couple of months ago, and her computer was down for about 2 weeks. And she was just absolutely upset because she knew she was missing all of her friends sending her all the jokes. And she was like, they're going to think something's wrong. So, all this stuff isn't just for geeks. Anybody can do it. And here's a little chart. It's called the conversation prism. And it basically, you are considered to be like in the middle of it. And around it is all of the different social media tools as of right now. And this chart kind of changes almost on a daily basis with new applications. And it's kind of listing, you know, the social networks that are out there. And by no means does it list all of them, because I don't think you could fit them on a screen. But the social networks, the video sharing sites, events, music, there's just a lot out there. You can't do them all, or you wouldn't be able to get anything else done in your life. I always say, you know, pick something, try it. Don't try 10 things at once. You know, maybe start with one and then go from there. So today, basically, we're going to talk about some of the tools that I personally use, because I'm not an expert on them, but I do use them, a lot of them on a daily basis. So kind of show you what I'm doing with them, and maybe talk about some ideas of how you guys could use them in your work. I'm also a big believer of not doing extra work. So there's some really, really cool videos online by this company called CommonCraft, and all they do is make videos about technology concepts in plain English. And they're just really simple. They're like 2 minutes long, and they do loads of them. So we're going to watch several of those as we talk about each section. The first, you know, the one that I'm probably all over is Facebook. I use it all the time, all day long. And usually you'll find there's kind of like two types of people. There's the people that live on Facebook, and everything they do is on Facebook. And I'm probably one of those, because I'll be at a football game and I'm taking pictures and putting it on Facebook. You know, and my friends, you know, we're updating our statuses when we're at the DMV or whatever. And you kind of do everything on there. Your life is just on there. And I choose to do that. But you don't have to do that. You can kind of do this at whatever level of comfort that you have. So if you're not comfortable being so public, you don't have to be. You can just go on and have friends. And, you know, if you want to post pictures, you can, but you don't have to. One of the cool kind of experiences with Facebook that I can see maybe you all being able to use is about a year ago, we were throwing a retirement party for our music minister at my church. And he had been the music minister there for like 30 years. So we were going to have this big concert and a big alumni choir with everyone that had ever been in the youth choirs and all that stuff. Well, I created the event on Facebook, and I invited the 30 people on my friends list that I thought would be able to come. Within a day, there were 500 people on the invite list, because those 30 people knew 30 people who knew 30 people, because there's no way you can possibly know everyone and be friends with everyone who would want to come to an event. But as long as you've got kind of a small base to start with, they can then take it from there. And so within the week, we had photos, because you can post photos on the event. So, you know, people were posting photos from choir tours in the 70s. And just having a big time and, you know, tagging the photos of people with their horrible hair in the 80s, posting videos, I mean, all sorts of stuff. And it really generated a lot of excitement about the event for weeks and weeks beforehand. And all the people were talking to each other before they even got to the weekend retirement event. And, you know, they're talking it up with their friends because they know who all's going to be there, and they've been talking about it online. So that's really fun. The other kind of fun thing that I did recently on Facebook was not last night's debate, because I was not home, but the debate 2 weeks ago. Yeah, the one. Yeah. I actually watched it and was on Facebook while I was watching it. And so all of my friends, and my husband's from England, so he has this totally different view of politics here, and it's really interesting. So he was on Facebook as well. So his friends over in Europe are there, and they can watch the debate online. And then all of our friends from kind of all over were on it. So we're all watching the debate and, like, commenting as it's going on about what they're talking about. So whereas normally you would just kind of watch the debate and you might remember a couple of things to talk about the next day at work or whatever, that way we were totally interactive with the debate. Somebody would, you know, be talking about, oh, I'm really glad they asked about Israel. And then, you know, several comments. Or, oh, wow, I'm so glad somebody brought up Darfur. And then talking about it. And then, I mean, sometimes I'll be the retarded person and I'll be like, what is on Michelle Obama's dress? Because I was like, those weirdo things on there. So that was the whole conversation. But whereas the debate would normally, I mean, I probably wouldn't have even lasted through a normal debate, but that made it really exciting. And I felt like I was part of it. And I was able to have conversations with, you know, my Republican and Democrat friends and kind of have our own little debate on Facebook. So that was kind of fun. To show you kind of the importance of Facebook and that it's not just kind of a fad, I do have some statistics. Facebook started in 2004 and there were 1 million users. Today, there are 110 million active users. And they consider active users someone who is logged in at least once a month. So their actual user base is way larger than 110 million. But 110 million people log in at least once a month. Most of us log in like once an hour. It's the fourth most trafficked website in the world. It's like Google, Yahoo, and I cannot remember the third one for the life of me. And then Facebook, which is kind of unreal. And there's more than 6 million active user groups, which is something we'll talk about later. Ronnie, is that your name?
Ronnie.
She was just telling me when she came in this morning, she's just created a page for the Discover Archive Library. So that's another 6,000,001 active user groups. Because you can create a group about anything. You know, whatever you care about, create a group about it. There's probably already a group about it, but you could create another one. That's fine. Here's the first video from Common Craft. And it's kind of talking about social networks in general, not just specifically Facebook. It covers Facebook, LinkedIn, MySpace, just a general social networks and what they are.
Networks get things done. Whether it's sending a letter or lighting your home, networks make it happen. To get from Chicago to Santa Fe, we need to see the network of roads that will get us there. We see that Chicago is connected to St. Louis, which is connected to Dallas, which is connected to Santa Fe. Of course, people networks can help us with finding jobs, meeting new friends, and finding partners. You know how it works. Bob is your friend, and he knows Sally, and Sally's friend Joe has a job for you. This is a network of people, a social network. Yay! The problem with social networks in the real world is that most of the connections between people are hidden. Your network may have huge potential, but it's only as valuable as the people and the connections that you can see. Boo! This problem is being solved by a type of website called a social networking site. These websites help you see connections that are hidden in the real world. Here's how it works. You sign up for a free account and fill out your profile. Then you look for people you know. When you find someone, you click a button that says Add as Friend. Once you do this, you and that person have a connection on the website that others can see. They are a member of your network, and you are a member of theirs. What's really cool is that you can see who your friends know and who your friends' friends know. You're no longer a stranger, so you can contact them more easily. This solves a real-world problem because your network has hidden opportunities. Social networking sites make these connections between people visible. Like a map for a highway, they show you the people network that can help you get to your next destination, whether it's a job, a new partner, or a great place to live. Your network is suddenly more useful. You can get started at these sites: LinkedIn, Facebook, and MySpace.
Woo! So that was the first little video. Sometimes these videos don't let you.
So all these are on YouTube?
Yes, and that'll be in the links that I'll email you if that little piece of paper has kind of gone around. Vanderbilt is definitely already on Facebook. I mean, it's huge. When you join Facebook, you become part of a network. And so as of Tuesday, there were 21,254 people in the Vanderbilt network, which is pretty cool. A conversation I had with Melanie Moran last week, we were talking about ways to possibly leverage that network with our emergency alert plan. Probably a lot of you are on the Alert VU, where, you know, if there was a tornado or a shooter on campus, that we could very quickly get that information out. So we're talking to Facebook about possibly being able to send out a message to everyone on that Vanderbilt network. So that's kind of one way that we're hoping to use it. Every organization at Vanderbilt probably has a Facebook group. It's kind of unreal. If you go on to Facebook and just search, here's my Facebook homepage. If you go on and search for Vanderbilt, it comes up with comes up with all the people that have anything to do with Vanderbilt in their profile. Let's go to groups. There's over 500, and it doesn't even tell you the actual number. 500 groups on Facebook. There's one of my favorite ones that I think is kind of funny is Overheard at Vanderbilt. And it's people that go on and, like, type in really funny things they've heard. And some of them are really kind of just, you know, clever, funny. But, yeah, there's loads. And anybody can create a group. You don't have to have – if you're on Facebook, you can create a group. For those of you that aren't, I'll just kind of briefly go over what Facebook is. I'm logged in. So when I log in, this is kind of what I see. And on your homepage, it's keeping track of – it's letting you know what all of your friends have been up to. The friends that I really keep up with on Facebook, I see in person once a week. But it's kind of the way that we know what each other is doing all the time, which might be too much information for some people. But a lot of my closest friends, we're all kind of similar. So we all, you know, do everything on Facebook. We post all our pictures from what we're doing. But you do, you know, talk to the people that you haven't seen forever. About a week ago, the guy that I went to my high school prom with got on Facebook. So, you know, we caught up and we hadn't talked in 10 years. And so that was really kind of cool. And so I've been threatening to post our prom picture online, but I think that would be more embarrassing for me than him. With, you know, the bangs that were really popular in the 90s that moved independently of the rest of your hair. So this is kind of what's considered the home page. So this is all about everybody else, what they're doing. So you can kind of quickly see what they're doing. And then your own page is what you have done. So like right now, my status says setting up to teach my second class in Garland Hall, and it's raining. So people, you know, write can leave notes for you, do all sorts of stuff. You can post pictures. I've got my Flickr feed automatically set to show up on my Facebook. So when I post pictures on Flickr, they show up on Facebook. And we'll talk about Flickr and Delicious. And I have my Delicious feed to automatically show up on my Facebook. There's a little program on my computer that keeps track of what I'm listening to, and it posts it on Facebook. Sometimes you want to go, I wasn't actually listening to that. I really don't want people to think I liked that song that just randomly came on. I'm a Vanderbilt football fan. Woo! So I've got, that's, you know, one of the groups that I've joined. Washington Caps fan. Sorry, Predators. You know, it keeps track. I put in there the books that I'm reading, and you can go in and do review. I mean, it's limitless. There's thousands and thousands and thousands of things that you can add on your Facebook. Okay, we're going to quickly move on because I ran out of time the other day. Second, we'll talk about Twitter. Twitter, the Twitter website, basically when you go to it, it says, what are you doing? So here is my Twitter. It says, what are you doing? And you just, again, type in, what are you doing? And sometimes they're retarded things. Sometimes they're, you know, good things. I said, this was one that was on during the debate. Somebody Twittered, all we hear about is paint on Wall Street and Main Street. What about Sesame Street? People are living in trash cans there. Sometimes they're pointless. This was one of mine. I was like, excuse me, I believe you have my stapler, which was in a reference to the Office Space movie. Sometimes they're informative. CNN has a Twitter feed, and so they were Twittering about the wildfires in LA. Sometimes they're thoughtful. One of my friends was asking, you know, will someone ask the candidates about poverty in America during the debate? So it can be whatever you want to put on there. I know Vanderbilt has a little Twitter feed that they put their news, they put like different news things on. Melanie was talking about that on Tuesday, so I don't know all the details about that. But I know they're using it, and NPR followed our feed and ended up pulling one of our graduation speakers, I think. They heard about our graduation speaker through Twitter and then covered it. So I don't think we ever would have gotten them to cover it if we hadn't been on Twitter, because they wouldn't care, because it's just like another university in the, you know, the large scheme of things. The statistics on Twitter. In December 2007, there were 650,000 users, and 10 months later, there's 3 million users. So it's, again, really, really growing. On Twitter, if you update your status on Twitter, you can tell it to update Facebook. So I kind of do that because then I'm killing two birds with one stone. I can just do one thing, and it'll update my Facebook, my blog, several different things. And that's another little just easy thing in Facebook to go in and tell it to do that. Here is a very quick video about Twitter.
So, what are you doing? It's one of the first questions we often ask friends and family. Even if the answer is just mowing the lawn or cooking dinner, it's interesting to us. It makes us feel connected and a part of each other's lives. Unfortunately, most of our day-to-day lives are hidden from people that care. Of course, we have email and blogs and phones to keep us connected, but you wouldn't send an email to a friend to tell them you're having coffee. Your friend doesn't need to know that. But what about people that want to know about the little things that happen in your life? Real life happens between blog posts and emails, and now there's a way to share. This is Twitter in plain English. Thanks to Twitter, it's possible to share short, bite-sized updates about your life and follow the updates of people that matter to you via the web. Here's how it works. Meet Carla. She's addicted to her mobile phone, reads blogs every day, and has contacts all over the world. She heard about Twitter and was skeptical. After some of her friends couldn't stop talking about it, she gave it a try. She signed up for free and saw that Twitter pages look a little like blogs with very short posts. Each page is personal and has updates from friends. She got started by looking up her friends on Twitter.com. After finding a few, she clicked follow to start seeing their updates on her Twitter page. Within hours, she began to see a different side of people she chose to follow. She didn't know that Stephen in Seattle was a baseball fan, or that Julia in London was reading a new investment book. The little messages from Twitter painted a picture of her friends, family, and coworkers that she'd never seen before. It was the real world. Soon, she became a fan of Twitter and posted updates every day. Her friends followed her updates and learned that she recently discovered a passion for Van Halen. They could see Carla's life between blog posts and emails. For Carla, Twitter worked because it was simple. The updates were always short, under 140 characters. Plus, she could post updates and follow her friends using the Twitter website, software on her browser, a mobile phone, or instant messages. By asking members to answer the question, "What are you doing?" Carla found that Twitter brought her closer to people that matter to her, 140 characters at a time. Find out what your friends are doing at twitter.com.
And that's one of the reasons Twitter and Facebook kind of are so constantly updated, is because you can do it all on your cell phone, basically. If you've got an iPhone or a BlackBerry, you can almost run the entire application on your phone. But even just with a regular cell phone, all you have to do is send a text message, and it'll automatically update it. So you don't have to be at your computer. I know I was in Alaska in May with my family, and we had no, I mean, I was like, even though I'm a total techie geeky, I was not paying $9 for a minute of web access. But I would update my Twitter and Facebook on my cell phone because I still had cell access. So the whole time we're in Alaska, I'm updating my status on Facebook, posting pictures. My grandparents, again, because she's really into it, so they could keep track of us. So we weren't having, you know, we weren't needing to call home as often because she knew what we were doing. She even could see pictures of it. So that's one of the really fun things about it, that you can, you know, run those applications on your phone. One thing we're going to try with Twitter, I wanted to do it this year, but maybe next year, is there's a way on Twitter where you can create a certain series of characters that people type in. So what we're wanting to try is at Reunion. Is there anybody from Reunion Office here? No? Shh. If you Twitter and you use this certain set of characters, it will let us know that you've talked about Reunion, and we can display all of those together. So of all the, you know, couple thousand people that are on campus, they could be Twittering about Reunion, and we could have kind of a page of what they think's fun and what they're doing and what's going on. They Twitter did this recently with, and they're still doing it, with the election. They have a page that keeps track of what people are talking about with the election, and it's live updating, and you'll see it's updating. If they're talking about Obama, McCain, Biden, or Palin, it's going to show up here. So obviously during a debate or something, that's really interesting to watch, because again, it's kind of a very live conversation, and you can reply to people. If you only want to hear about a certain person, you know, just say you only want to hear about that person. It also, Twitter kind of keeps, it's got all sorts of interesting little statistics about what the big topics they're talking about. So obviously the plumber right now is a really big topic. And if y'all have not seen that video on YouTube, it's really interesting with Obama and Joe the plumber. So you can just Google it. So yeah, they kind of keep track of the hot keywords, the hot buttons. Was it last weekend or this past weekend? It just had one word up there, David Letterman, because McCain had finally agreed. So everybody was talking about him, you know, getting on there. So that was the one big word. So it's kind of fun, but we're hoping to eventually to do one where it's about Reunion, or we could just have a general one about Vanderbilt. If anybody, although who knows, that could be bad and good. But that's one way we are going to try and do that. It's very popular at big tech conferences where you've got a lot of really techie, geeky people that they'll do this. And if you're at that conference, then you already know beforehand because they'll have sent you a note saying, you know, if you're at this conference and you're on Twitter, please tag all of your posts with this key phrase so that it'll show up on our page. So that's kind of, that's Twitter in not 140 characters or less, but we're getting there. Okay, we'll quickly do Flickr. Anybody using Flickr? You know Flickr? It's just a photo sharing site. I take a lot of pictures, and one reason I use Flickr is almost basically as a backup of all my pictures, because it stores the original high quality version of your image. So you've always got that online. You can print your pictures in so many different ways. I mean, I think they even let you print it as wallpaper now, and wrapping paper, and you can do a calendar. But here's my Flickr feed, which is, again, random pictures of my dog with my niece. We have a Flickr account for Vanderbilt Alumni Office that we use in DAR Communications. And right now we're using it heavily with the Reunion because we've got a an album for each class that's at reunion this year. So some of them have a lot of pictures, some of them don't. You know, they've submitted really old pictures. And then after reunion, we'll post the pictures from all of their classes' events, that weekend. We also post all of the trips that the Vanderbilt Travel Program goes on. All of their pictures are on there. So anybody that went on that trip can see the pictures, and they can print them directly from there. And we can use these on any of our websites. So we're pulling these photos, obviously, onto the alumni site. So it just makes it kind of easy and fun. And again, it's that backup of that original photo that I really like. So we've got a really... Oh, we'll do the statistics because they're really interesting. I love statistics. Yes. On a free account, it's a megabyte limit, but it's about 200 photos. I have a pro account just because I'm a photo freak, and it's $24 a year, which is not bad to me as a permanent kind of backup of my pictures, and I can do so much with it and share it with anybody I want to. But yeah, that free account is limited. And you know, it's kind of up to you if you want to spend $24 on it or not. But you can do, if you do that $24 a year, it's unlimited. You can do as much as you want. So in 2005, Flickr users had posted 4 million photos on the whole site. Now there's more than 3 million photos uploaded every single day, which is kind of mind-boggling to think of that. I don't know how many billions of photos are on Flickr now. One cool thing, I know we've done this, is if you're trying to promote something and looking for photos, I find photos on Flickr to use, and some people will just let you use their photos, and some people you can just contact them and work out, you know, if you want to buy to be able to use their photo. So it's a great kind of photo resource as well for you. So here is the quickie Flickr Commoncraft video.
When asked what should be saved in a fire, along with family and pets, people often choose photos. If photos mean a lot to you, it's time to learn why keeping them on the web makes sense. This is online photo sharing in plain English. As you know, cameras and photography have changed. What used to appear on paper now appears on computers and phones. No matter the format, we still love our photos, and now they have new powers. But first, let's be practical. These days, a fire may not be your biggest worry. A computer failure can destroy thousands of memories. You can avoid this by keeping your photos backed up on the internet. A number of sites make it inexpensive and easy for you to upload your photos for safekeeping. Now, because photos can be uploaded to a website, all sorts of cool things are possible. To make our point, let's look at the old way. You visit the Grand Canyon and take beautiful photos. You get them developed, and a few days later add them to a photo album that sits on a shelf. Few people see them, and it's a pain to find a specific photo in all those albums. Boo! Now, let's look at the new way, with a popular service I use called Flickr. You visit the Grand Canyon and take beautiful photos with a digital camera. Once you're home, you move the photos onto your computer and then upload them to the Flickr website. You just click Upload, find the photos on your computer, and upload them to the web for safekeeping. Ah, sweet peace of mind. Yay! But it doesn't stop there. You need to make sure that it's easy to find photos in the future. Along with adding titles, you can add keywords or tags that describe the photo. You might use tags like Grand Canyon, Arizona, Park, Scenery, 2007 to describe this photo. Each of these tags becomes a way for you to find photos in the future. Just click a tag and 1,000 photos become a few related ones. Now, once your photos are online and findable, it's time to look at another fun part of online photo sharing, the actual sharing. You can choose to make your photos public or private. It's up to you. Private is like a photo on your wall. Few see it. But public is like taking your photos to a party. They become a representation of you and offer a way to make friends. So, try sharing your online photos with the public. Here's what to expect. Friends and even strangers may leave comments on your photos. You can see which of your photos are most popular, and you may even discover that you're more motivated to take photos because you want to share them with the world. So, photo sharing sites like Flickr do two things really well. One, they keep your photos safe, organized, and findable. And two, they make photo sharing fun by making photos social. At the very least, back up your photos online. But if you're ready for fun, open your photos to the world and start to feel the love. You can get started at Flickr, Webshots, or PhotoBucket.com.
I'm... That's when you're uploading photos to Flickr, if you just tag them as you're going along, it really, really does simplify things. Because as I upload mine, I sometimes even tag people in them. So, like, for instance, I can find all the pictures of my niece Sarah from whenever across all events because it's very easy. Or if I want to find all the pictures of glaciers, I just type glacier and you automatically get them. Whereas, again, if you were just having to scroll through massive amounts of photos, it would take forever. A fun thing that I did with Flickr recently, let me see if I can find it. One of my friends was moving out of town, and so we have a giant Flickr conglomeration at my church with about 14,000 pictures on it. So when he left, I did this little mosaic of the student ministry logo, and it's out of all of our photos from our Flickr feed. And basically, all I did, it's just this little program, and you go in and you say, and again, I did it with tags because I wanted it to only use pictures from when he was here. And so I said, you know, use this, 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 and this. And 23 hours later, it had done this. And so I had it printed for him. And that was my going away gift for him. But it's just kind of fun things like that you really could never do if you didn't have Flickr, Photo Bucket, stuff like that. Because you really have to be able to organize those photos and pick out the ones that you want. Because you don't really want pictures from 1974. You know, in something that somebody wasn't even alive then. So that was kind of a little fun Flickr project. Okay, Delicious. Anybody using Delicious? Yay, excellent. Delicious is a social bookmarking application. I was talking to one of the girls in my office about it, and so she was like, well, why would you even need this? Why don't you just add it to favorites in your browser? Well, the cool thing about this is you can see it from anywhere, from anyone's computer, so it's not tied to that browser or that computer. If you're at a friend's house and you're like, oh, there was this really cool link, you can just go online, go to your Delicious account, and there it is. And again, you can tag all of your links. I know in my area, and a lot of you guys, I go to a lot of websites because I'm trying to keep track of, you know, what the newest trends are. Are there new coding things out there? Are there new applications? Trying to keep track of it. So when I find something, I'm always linking, you know, tagging it, trying to keep track of it so that I can look it up later. So sometimes I'll find, you know, a cool tutorial on how to make something look grungy in Photoshop. So I'll tag it Adobe Photoshop Grunge. And then that way, in the future, if I'm looking for that, all I have to do is go to that little tag, and there you go. Here is my Delicious homepage, and here's all my tags for my links. So there's like anything that I've tagged with Adobe. So I can quickly take all of my links down from however many thousand links I have to what? It brought me 13 from Adobe. So that's, you very quickly find what you want. And then if I know someone else who's kind of in my field, I can follow their Delicious feed. So if they find something fun, I can see it as well. So, you know, if you're researching, I don't know, who knows what you're researching, but whatever your topic is, you know, find somebody that's into that. Or, for instance, like, let's see, I've tagged something Photoshop. So I can look at the things I've tagged as Photoshop, or I can look at what everyone that uses Delicious has tagged as Photoshop, which then brings me so many links that it's kind of ridiculous. Let's see how many. 1,000,008, you know, that many bookmarks of everybody that's on Delicious. So it's because people really do tag their links so that you can find them later. I used this recently for one of my papers that I was writing, and you know, as I was finding stuff about my research topic, I just tagged it that so I could really, really easily find it. When I was getting this class together, you know, I kept track of what those were, so I tagged all of the stuff. Let's find it. Let's go back. And this is one thing, social media class. So all the links that I'm talking about today, I've tagged social media class. So I can just send you this link, which I will in an email. And that shows you all the links that I've talked about today. So that's, you know, just kind of a fun little organizational organizational bit. Here are those lovely stats that I like keeping track of on applications like this. There's 5 million active users on Delicious, and of those 5 million people, we're posting 7,000 new links an hour. And we're tagging them. So if you're researching, sometimes you could just go on Delicious and research instead of Google, because we've specifically tagged links that we know for sure they are about that topic, instead of sometimes Google just guesses. And I love Google, but Delicious, if somebody's tagged it that, it is about that topic, no doubt. So it's a good research tool. And here is the quickie social bookmarking video.
Just too much. Did you know that there are over 15 billion web pages? To make sense of it all, we need ways to pluck out the best pages and save them for later. We have choices. We could bookmark or add to favorites in our web browser. Nah, it quickly becomes messy. Plus, these bookmarks are tied to only one computer. This is the old way. There's a new way that doesn't use a browser. It uses a website. This is called a social bookmarking site, and the one we'll use today is called Delicious. It makes bookmarking more useful and fun. We'll focus on three things: how to get started with bookmarking, how bookmarks are organized by tags, and why this kind of bookmarking is social. First, go to delicious.com to sign up for a free account. While you're signing up, you'll see an easy way to add a couple of buttons to your browser. These are important. The tag button is how you'll add new bookmarks to the website. On any website, you can click tag to save that site as a Delicious bookmark. Easy. Consider this example. You're a teacher who often uses the web to find math lessons for 8th graders. You're overwhelmed by all the sites. There are just too many to remember. Using Delicious, remembering sites is as easy as tagging them. Here's one. Oh, nice. Perfect. Here's what happens when you tag a site. A new window opens and asks for more information. You can add keywords or tags that describe the site. These will help you find bookmarks later. You might tag this site, Algebra, Best Of, Tutorial, Math, and Homework. Then click Save to save it on the Delicious website. When you save a page like this, two things happen. First, the site is saved with all your other bookmarks on Delicious.com. Second, the tags are saved in a list of all your tags. You just repeat this process for every site you want to save. This is bookmarking. Let's fast forward 2 months to make our second point, why tags are so important. Let's say you now have 100 bookmarked sites. Chaos, right? Well, since you added tags, you have a way to sort the bookmarks by the tags you assign. To find all the sites about algebra, you click the algebra tag and voila, 100 becomes 3. All your bookmarks are now more findable, thanks to tags. But that's only part of the fun. Now, let's look at the social part of bookmarking to make our third point. Think about your fellow teachers. Couldn't they benefit from seeing your bookmarks? Well, they can. Delicious bookmarks are public. This means that your friends and peers can see your bookmarks and use your tags just like you. That's why this is called social bookmarking. Your bookmarks can benefit other people. Think about it this way. You start bookmarking algebra sites and your peers can see the interesting sites you find. Then, they start bookmarking too. Within a few weeks, a group of teachers are all bookmarking their favorite math websites, and because they're all public, everyone discovers new and relevant materials. Together, you create a network that produces a steady stream of interesting and useful websites, all organized by tags on the Delicious website. The lesson is that social bookmarking sites take a world of chaos and make it orderly. Remember, there are three steps to get started. First, go to delicious.com to sign up and add the buttons to your browser. Second, start bookmarking sites with tags. And third, be social. Notice how useful and fun other people's bookmarks can be. I'm Lee Lefever, and this has been Social Bookmarking in Plain English on The Common Craft Show.
So that's Delicious. Any questions about Delicious? Okay. Yay, we actually get to Google today. I love Google. If you don't have a Gmail account, that would be get a Gmail account. You need a Gmail account to use any of the Google apps. And there are loads and loads and loads and loads of Google apps. I use three of the Google apps almost on a daily basis. Google Calendar, which is just a calendar, and you can have multiple calendars. So I know I have a calendar for all my family's birthdays. So I've got them all in there, and it's shared, and we can all see the same calendar, so it kind of keeps track of all the birthdays. You can post the calendar on your website. So let's say you could have your department's calendar on there. If you're a teacher, you could put your syllabus on a calendar and share it with your students. Your students can subscribe to the calendar in Outlook or in their own Gmail account. If you change something on your syllabus, it would automatically update it in theirs. So it's a living calendar. It's not static. It's not, you know, when you send it to them, that's the final version. It's kind of always updating. You know, you can kind of use that for anything. You can create as many Google calendars as you want with one Gmail account, so you're not limited. Google Documents is basically Word, Excel, and PowerPoint, except it's all online. You can use it on a Mac, on a PC. You can even use it on your iPhone or your BlackBerry if you've got one. And it's pretty much got almost the exact same features. But it's accessible anywhere. You know, you don't have to be on your computer. You can be on someone else's computer. If I'm creating a document in Google Docs and I want someone else to be able to look at it, I can share it with them and they can look at it. Let's say I want Seth to be able to edit it because he edits and I have horrible grammar. Then I can share it with Seth as a collaborator and he can edit it. So it's kind of, it's very cool, the sharing of the documents. Again, one way you could use that, you know, if you have something you were going to pass out in class or in a meeting, put it in Google Docs instead and share that link. You know, be more green. Don't print something just to print it. Because especially if you're a teacher and if you're working with students, they've all got Gmail accounts. I can almost guarantee you 99% of the students here have Gmail accounts. And if they do, they've already got Google Docs. So you just share it with them. You're good to go. You've not wasted a tree. Google Reader. Anybody heard of an RSS feed? You see the little orange kind of buttons, and we'll show it in a little bit. I visit a lot of websites. Again, my area, I'm always on the web, reading tech websites, you know, all that stuff. And it gets sometimes overwhelming because you're trying to keep track of what all these different websites are posting. So that's where RSS feeds come in. So we're going to watch a short little video that explains this so much better than I can, as all the other videos have.
Internet has problems. Technomati says there's over 50 million blogs, and you can see it's going up. This is overwhelming. Today's show is about a new and efficient way to keep up with all this cool stuff that's happening on the internet. I'm going to talk about two ways that you can keep up with what's happening on the web. There's the old slow way. Boo. Then there's the new fast way. Yay! Here's the difference between new and the old way. This is you, and here are your favorite websites. You log on to your computer, and you're looking for something new. So you go out to your favorite blogs. Is there anything new there? Nope. You go out to your favorite news sites. Is there anything new? No. Every time you look for something new and it's not there, you've wasted valuable time. This is the old way. Now, let's consider the new and fast way, which is simply taking these arrows and turning them the other way, which means that the new things from blogs and the new things from your news sites comes to you instead. It's like Netflix compared to the video store. So what we're talking about is using a single website that becomes your home for reading all the new stuff that's coming from your favorite websites. There are two steps for getting started. The first step is you need a home for reading the new posts. This is a website called a Reader. They are free, and all you need is an account. I use a site called Google Reader. It looks like this. My favorite sites are listed on the left, and on the right, I can scroll through all the new posts from my favorite sites in a single place. So, to complete step one, you need to go sign up for a reader at Google Reader, Bloglines, NewsGator, MyYahoo are good places to start. Step number two is to set up a connection between your reader and your favorite websites. Setting up these connections is called subscribing, and it's really important. Nearly every blog and news site offers the ability for you to subscribe so that updates from these sites show up here in your reader. To set up these subscriptions, you just need to look for funny little icons. This is the standard one using the standard orange color. You may also see these. These little icons say, hey, look, subscribe to me. I can save you time. Once you find one of these buttons on your favorite site, click on it, and the page that opens up will give you everything you need for subscribing. After you click that button, one of two types of pages are likely to appear. This is one that provides one-click access to subscribing in your newsreader. The other page you're likely to see looks like this with code on it. If you see this page, copy the URL out of the page, go to your reader, and look for a link that says add subscription or add feed, and click on that and paste the link into your reader. So once you've added those subscriptions and the connection is there, new posts will start arriving in your reader, and you'll see why this is the new, faster way to read the web. It's addicted, so be careful. So, a quick recap. There are two things you need to do. Number one is go sign up for a reader. Number two is to go to your favorite websites, click on the icon, and subscribe. I'm Lee LaFever, and this has been...
This really does save you time if you go to a lot of websites. Here is my Google Reader. So instead of having to go to all of these sites every day, this is what's new on all of those sites. It's come to me. And so I can kind of pick and choose in, you know, seconds. Okay, I don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care, don't care. And I've not wasted going to every single website. Is that new? Blah, blah. It comes to you. All of the big, pretty much most websites today have RSS feeds. You know, MSN, all the big MSNBC, excuse me, CNN, all the big news sites. Vanderbilt, of course, has RSS feeds. A lot of places you can even say, I only want the sports news. So you can really, really specify kind of what you want down to the smallest little detail. So this is a big time saver for me. I don't know if it will be for you. It kind of depends on your area. You know, I've got a lot of higher ed. There's a lot of people in higher ed web development, and I follow their blogs because we're all talking about, you know, trends and new things that we're doing in web development. So I follow them. And again, I don't have to go to each one of these websites. I automatically know, you know, okay, this guy's posted a new article. And that's the great title, Managing Social Networks. It's the community, stupid. But yeah, this is, and again, this is all within Gmail. If you get your Gmail account, you can get to these. For instance, here's my Google Documents, and I had been keeping track of some of my notes about this class in my Google Documents because I can get to it from anywhere. And it, you know, it's just like Word. You can do, obviously, Excel spreadsheets in it as well. I know my mom got a new computer recently, and she's just using Google Docs now. We didn't even install Word on her computer, and she loves it because she can get to it anywhere, and she can send stuff to me to look at, so it's just kind of fun. We've got basically another, and I kind of alluded to this earlier, was that all of these tools, another cool thing about them is that they play well together. And that's one of my little slides, is they play well together. Let's go there. Since I created the slide, I might as well show it. Anytime I do anything on Flickr, Twitter, Delicious, Last.fm, any of these things, it automatically updates my Facebook. It automatically updates my blog. So I've done one thing, and it goes out to all these multiple places. So instead of spending 10 minutes doing something, I spent 30 seconds doing it. But it looks like I actually went out and did all these things. So if you have a website for your department or for your class, this is a great way to look like you're updating it a lot of, you know, very, very frequently. But really, you're only having to do it one place. And you could have a Facebook page for your department, and you could have your website for your department. And it all gets updated at the same time. And kind of reverse, if I post something on Facebook, it goes out to my blog as well. So they're kind of fun ways. I think I've already kind of, the ways we're using it in my office right now, we've got all of our reunion classes, or most of them are doing blogging. You know, we've got people from the class of 1948 on Facebook, which is crazy. So we've got Facebook groups, The class of 2003 has a big Facebook group, and they're obviously the most young ones, and they're getting all their kids to post pictures, and they're kind of really getting into it. We've got our online video. We're doing some stuff on Blip TV and YouTube for a reunion, and we've obviously got all of our Flickr photos on there, and we're trying to think of new ways to be using it all the time. Sometimes some of these tools are, you're not going to be able to use them for work. They're just totally personal stuff. But a lot of times, if you kind of think about it, you can work out a way where you might be able to do something in a really cool way online and connect with, you know, the 35 and under demographic that's living online. Everything they're doing is there, and they want to make the, you know, make it easy for them to get involved. Any questions? Really quickly. I've, like, zoomed through a lot of that. Sorry. I ran out of time the other day, so I wanted to get through everything.
Is that all public?
No. It's totally private unless you want to share it. Like, if you don't want to share it, then you're the only one that can see it. Like, most of my stuff is only me. Like, I wrote one of my papers for school on Google Documents. I don't want anybody else to read that. So it's on there. But I did share it with someone to help me look it over and edit it. And then I unshared it. So everything's... And that's kind of all of this stuff... You can be as public or as private as you want to. Like, I have a setting on my Facebook that I can hide some of my Facebook from certain people. Because as much as I love everyone that I work with, of course I don't want them to see everything that I've got on my Facebook. You know, but I'm fine with them being my friend on Facebook. But, you know, you just have those groups where you say, okay, I'll be your friend, but I don't really want you to be able to see my status or my pictures. Or this, or this, or this. So you can go in and really, really customize that, you know, and let the people that you care about see your information. And, you know, your kind of acquaintances, you don't have to let them see that. The only thing that is public all the time is Delicious. Those, if you post something on Delicious, anybody can see that. So just kind of keep that in mind. But basically, really, you're only posting links on that anyway. You're not really posting personal information. But yeah, Google Docs is totally private unless you want to share it. And all those calendars are private unless you want to share it. So it's kind of on a... And you could have some private things and some shared things. It's really very on the line-by-line item. You can kind of decide what you're wanting to do. Let's see. Google Reader's private. And the Flickr is totally up to you. You can make some pictures private and some pictures... not. If you want to be able to show the pictures on an outside website, you have to make them public.
If Flickr's storing that many pictures, what's the chance of them having trouble?
I know, that's the big question. They have, billion-dollar investors that want to make sure that they don't go down, and they have, you know, multiple ways of backing up all of their servers. And they're kind of held to a kind of higher level of accountability because there are paid accounts. So people are paying to use the service. It's not free. And when you're paying for something, you know, you do have that certain level of expectation. Like, I would not, and I don't even do this, and I'm very online. Flickr isn't the only place I have my pictures. I have them on my computer. I have them on DVD. But they are online as well. I wouldn't depend on them totally.
Download the whole set of pictures that you have.
There's little plugins that you can do to download all the pictures from an album. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I like it because a lot of the online photo sharing sites don't keep that high resolution, that really, really high quality image. And so if you go to print it, it looks really bad. But this one keeps that high quality image. So if you do want to print a really big print, it still has that and it can use that one. The one it displays on the web is obviously a smaller version. But, you know, it's still got that file always. So you can do kind of cool stuff with it. And you can follow your friends on Flickr, you know, if they've got Flickr accounts so you can see their pictures. But you'd probably be following them on Facebook anyway. So any other random?
About creating a group for Mm-hmm. Creating a group in LinkedIn for mm-hmm. School of Engineering, and I went and looked looked at it, and there are a ton, because anybody can create a group. Mm-hmm. So I didn't do anything because I don't know. Do you have any thoughts on how you differentiate institutional information? I don't know that you want to, but how do you make it stand out from a sea of similar groups?
Good question. that's kind of the, I guess that's the rub with anybody can create these groups. And I know there's also been talk about creating, on LinkedIn, there's issues with creating like a Vanderbilt alumni group because there's no verification involved on there. So somebody could say they are a Vanderbilt alumni, but because it's not linked with anything here, you know, somebody could say that and they didn't even go to college. So there's, right now, they don't, and Facebook really doesn't either, have a way of differentiating. The only way now on Facebook it is when you join that Vanderbilt network, you do have to have a Vanderbilt email address. So only people that have that email address can join the network. And almost all of the colleges are that way, that you would have to have that email address. But groups, it's just totally open. Anybody can create a group. Don't have a suggestion for that. Anything else?
Can you insert pictures in Google Docs?
Yeah. Let's see. Let me find it. I haven't done it but it lets you do pretty much everything. Let's look. New. No pressure. Insert picture. There it is. And they're adding, the cool thing, Google is taking over the world. Google is always updating their products, and that's another cool thing about using an online version is that you always have the most up to date. Whereas, you know, if you've got Word or Pages or Keynote on your Mac or your PC, you're kind of stuck with the version that you bought until you pay to upgrade it. Whereas this one, they're kind of always adding new features, and you know, they've got one of the fun things about if you work at Google, you're allowed to have little pet projects. And so a lot of the developers, you know, their pet project is working on Google Docs. So they're just creating really, really cool stuff all the time, and we get the benefit of it. Cancel. Let me see if I can get to the My Account. There's so many. Like, here are just a few of the things that Google has created for people to use. I was showing you Docs, and then there's Calendar, and there's Gmail. You can create mailing lists on Google for free and keep track of that. Google has their own Picasa, which is similar to Flickr, and it's free, but it also has a limit for space, but you can buy more space. The Google Reader, we talked about that. You can actually build websites through Google that will be hosted on their servers. Google Talk, which is like IMing. It's just limitless, and they're always coming up with something new to do. So obviously Google Maps and all that fun stuff. Anything else? Yes?
As the very late arrival, are you making this available to us somehow?
Yes. I'll send you the slides and the links, and then apparently they're recording me, which is like absolutely mortifying. So if you want to listen to this again, yes. Yes. And you can email me. I had this class on Tuesday, and it was kind of fun because, you know, we left class. I went back and emailed them all. And so several of them have emailed saying, well, I've signed up for Facebook, but I can't decide what picture to use. You know, or if I signed up for Delicious, but I can't remember. So if I send you this stuff and you think of questions afterwards, just email them. We're good. I'd love to help people kind of learn how to use the new stuff. And I've tried to get people in our office on Facebook and Flickr because it's just fun. And it really does add something fun to your everyday life. Yes, ma'am?
I have a question then. So I created a group for Discover Archive. Mm-hmm. Yesterday. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of wondering, how do I go about promoting it then?
Well, you need to invite everybody that you know on Facebook.
Okay.
That's pretty much, you can go on to, if you want to find like big Vanderbilt groups on Facebook, you can post things on their wall. It'll be like posted items, and you could post links to that group. You can post on their wall. But the best way is to invite the people that you know, and then those people will invite the people they know. But there are some pretty large Vanderbilt groups that have, you know, thousands and thousands of members that you could go on there and promote it that way. And then, you know, if you've on your website, do a big Facebook button.
Oh, okay.
Kind of directing them to that. I know we did that on, let's get to... I can't type. On all of our class pages, let's see, we'll go to that one. We're linking to their Facebooks and their blogs so they can automatically, you know, and you don't really have to say anything. That logo kind of speaks for itself. Just put Facebook and it goes right to your group. And then people will join it just because it's fun, even if you don't really do anything on your group, because it's just kind of saying, I care about this. I would definitely say that. And then, yeah, just look for those big Vandergrill groups. And you can search for those gigantor ones. Anything else? Questions? Thoughts? Cool.